This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. A vibrant indie music scene exists in Durham today, but did you know that the Bold City was once the center of a thriving soul music community? Is it fucking up? Or do you want some more? Songs like Is It Funky Enough by the Communicators and Black Experience Band filled Durham's nightclubs and attracted racially mixed audiences in the 60s and 70s. Bold City Soul Revival is a collaborative effort of musicians, scholars, and Durhamites to recall that era. Johnny White's with us today. He was most well known for his band Johnny White and the Mighty Crusaders, though he now plays with a band called Johnny White and the Elite Band. Jason Perlmutter is here, too. He's a collector and researcher of local music in the Carolinas, the founder of the group called Carolina Soul. And Dwan Rees is the curator of music and performing arts at the Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture that opens in 2015. Welcome to all of you. It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having us.
Jason, what is the Bold City Soul Revival?
The Bold City Soul Revival, as you said, is a collaborative effort of scholars, community members, and most importantly, musicians, to tell the story of the vibrant soul scene that existed here in Durham in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And it was convened by Carter Q at the Durham County Library and funded very generously by the Durham Library Foundation and the North Carolina Humanities Council, which is a statewide nonprofit and affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities.
So let's see what it is we're trying to preserve and remember. Johnny White, take us back to that time in Bull City when the clubs were filled with soul music.
Yeah, so during that time, we had quite a few clubs in the area. The Stallion Club was the most well-known. We had the Craftsman's Lounge, Times Square, the Square Club, but we all enjoyed playing the Stallion Club because that's where you could get the most people in the Durham community.
And were they all from Durham? Were people at that time coming from other communities, Raleigh, Chapel Hill, or everybody else kind of have their own clubs at that time?
All of the communities had their own clubs at that time, but we had a tendency to draw a lot of people from those other communities to the Durham community, especially out of Fayetteville.
Oh, and racially mixed group.
Racially mixed, that's correct.
Now, the Stallion Club was bombed, wasn't it?
The Stallion Club was bombed, but we were able to get past that. And it did reopen, and it reopened with a bang.
Now, any sense or speculation that might have been intentional just because of the racial mixing or not?
I don't think so. Yeah. I don't think so.
Well, Dwan, we're talking here about soul music, and I wonder if that's distinct from R&B, and if so, how?
I think there is a fine line of distinction. Sometimes people use the terms interchangeably, but soul music, as many scholars like to talk about, is more about identity and agency to some degree. I mean, you think of James Brown really asserting himself as a black man, or Aretha Franklin asserting herself as a black woman. So there's an underlying message there that really permeates the music in the late 60s onto the 70s when you start to think about the black power movement and everything else that's going on socially and culturally.
Well, let's get another earful of that and listen to Johnny White and the Mighty Crusaders, this song called Physical, Healthy, and Trim. You know that I can tell you're gonna run away, but there is nothing I can say. But now I must admit my chance is kind of slim. I must admit my future's looking dim. You look so good standing there, physically healthy and trim. All right, Johnny White, what do you think makes soul so different, such a unique sound?
Feelings. The majority of the songs that I've written or collaborated with other writers, we write about feelings and experiences.
How important were the audiences to you in terms of not only your performance, but writing, the feedback you got from an audience?
Well, you could tell if you had written a good song, because those individuals who would come to hear you perform would always let you know if you had said something in your lyrics to affect them.
Now, how do you mean? Just because they're up and dancing, or they're actually talk to you about it?
Oh,
later?
They actually talk to you about it.
What kinds of things did you hear?
On the record, surely, I had a lot of people to tell me that the lyrics really affected them because it told a story that related to their experiences.
Tell us that story, the story of the lyrics. Or what are you saying in the lyrics?
Well, surely someone needs love is a universal saying to me, because I don't know how anyone can exist without having to feel the power of love. And so that's what the song was centered around.
Jason, you co-curated an exhibit called Soul Souvenirs, Durham's Musical Memories of the 1960s and 70s. Tell us about that.
That's correct. That's an exhibit that I worked on with historian Josh Davis and designers Lincoln Hancock and Robin Vushnik, both of whom are out of Raleigh. And that brings together images of recordings, images of bands, memorabilia, newspaper article clippings, all to tell the story of the Durham soul music scene in the 60s and 70s.
How big was it with respect to the rest of the scene, just in North Carolina? I mean, was this the center, or were there other places where it was just as big?
Well, I wouldn't say it was a center. North Carolina's a mix of medium-sized cities like Raleigh, Durham, Charlotte, Winston-Salem, Greensboro meant that a lot of towns had thriving soul music scenes. But Durham definitely had a vibrant one with some 40 or more bands that we've counted at this point operating on the soul music scene here.
And, of course, there were many, as you say, 40 or more making the rounds those days. Johnny Snells was one, and he's a guy dressed in drag, right?
That's correct, John Snells.
What do we know about him?
Well, he was billed as the he, the she, the it on his shows and was a legendary performer.
Another band called the Communicators and Black Experience Band. Let's get a little listen here.
One chance, one chance, one chance.
Oh, baby, yeah, yeah.
Ooh.
To prove my love to you.
You say
your love will bring me down.
There we go. Black Experience Band. That's a song called One Chance by the Communicators and Black Experience Band. Jason, what's so interesting about this band?
This band was a coupling of a five-member vocal group and an instrumental funk band. The Communicators were the vocalists. The Black Experience was the band. And that band was perhaps one of the best funk bands in Durham in the early 70s through the mid-70s. And I think their name, for starters, is interesting. For a band to have used the word black in their name shows the increasing black pride of the 70s. And their music was also political. They had a second single after One Chance, which we just heard, called Has Time Really Changed, which didn't do too well commercially, perhaps because of its message. But they were really showing how the soul music scene was not only about music, but also about politics and things of that nature.
Johnny White, did you have a sense that your music was about politics or political? Were you consciously political in any of your music?
No, I was not. I wasn't at all. My music was primarily for people to party, have a good time, and to, as I said, have some feeling.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Dwan, tell us about Durham's place in all of that and give us some perspective. When we think of soul music, Motown Records, Detroit, Stax Records, Stax in Memphis, Chess in Chicago, where does the South actually fit into the soul music scene?
Well, the South is part of the roots of the soul music scene. If you really look at the evolution of music and looking at the roots of rhythm and blues, and it's a blend of blues, country, and other styles. So soul is just a natural evolution of that. And in many centers, you know, just as North Carolina has medium-sized cities and a lot of rhythm and blues, its roots are in urban communities. The same things are going in smaller-sized cities. So I like to think everything that's going on locally also has national importance. So, you know, the activity going on in a place like Durham is just as important that what might have been going on in Memphis or Detroit or some of the other locations. with various other people being participating in the genre and creating their own music. Just because it doesn't have as wide of a platform doesn't mean it's any less important and meaningful in speaking to the social and cultural tenets of the time.
So it's important there. It's rooted in places like Durham and other places in the South. Did it have to go, but we associate it, at least I do, with a kind of an urban sound, an urban phenomenon. Is it something that went to the cities and came back to the South, or was it evolving here sort of on its own simultaneously?
I like to think of music evolving simultaneously. It's not a necessarily a linear progression. So you can have something going on in one city and something simultaneously going on in another city, and they may be doing the same things or they may be doing something different. And then with migration patterns and people traveling and recording, musicians get to listen to each other and learn from each other. So there's really this circular pattern that music travels across the country and across the world, too, because we have people across in other countries listening to rhythm and blues and soul music. So it has that global impact as well.
Johnny White, what inspired you to start playing music?
My father. My father was a gospel singer. And as a child, I often went with him to the recording studio. And at that time, they were recording and actually performing live on a radio. And so I was a part of that, and I wanted to do that.
Was there any tension in the household when you went to that secular music that was soul?
No, my father was a real role model for me. He wanted me to go to school and to make sure that if I majored in music, that I pursued it as a dream. But again, he left it up to me as an option.
And did you do that? You went to school, you majored in music?
I did. I graduated from North Carolina Central University. It was North Carolina College at that time. And that was one of the things that inspired us, being in the music department, to put together some of the bands that I had previously.
Who were your inspirations growing up? Who did you listen to?
I listened, of course, to Earth, Wind, and Fire, James Brown. I listened to various soulful artists like Jackie Wilson, just to mention a few. But we basically set up our system of musicians centered around James Brown and the Earth, Wind, and Fire.
How has the music changed for soul artists in Durham? You're still performing.
It has changed from the perspective that it's more commercialized. A lot of musicians have gotten away from actually playing live to using the technology of the studios and the instrumentation. Whereas back then, those recordings, we played on those ourselves, as opposed to doing what they call now sequencing.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually played on all those songs.
No, when you say commercialized, I mean you're talking about the techniques, meaning
the techniques.
Bringing in different musicians to kind of do some overdubs or do the background. But you wanted to be a commercial success. It was about bringing in an audience and
That's
selling
exactly
records
right.
and selling tickets,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. But the difference in then and now is that you can actually go into a studio. And if you know what you're doing with a good engineer, you don't have to have one or two people. Whereas back then, if there were nine people in the band, you had a live drummer, a live bass player, all of the musicians were live. Whereas now, that's not necessarily the case.
Jason, as part of the opening of this exhibit, you're moderating a discussion. Tell us about that. Who's going to participate and what's it about?
Okay. At the Haytai Heritage Center tonight at 7 o'clock, we're opening up the Soul Souvenirs exhibit, and we're featuring a panel discussion with four musicians who have been a big part of the Durham soul music scene. In fact, I think Johnny and I figured out before this program today that all of the panelists have been in Johnny's bands over the years. We've got Pete Joyner, who is a drummer and a drum teacher. We've got Vernell Mack, a vocalist. Aaron Mills, a bass player who actually had national success with the famous 80s R&B band's Cameo. And then finally, we have Charles Bailey, who was in the band we've heard on this program today, the Communicators and Black Experience Band, among many others. And they'll be talking about their experiences as musicians and giving us a flavor for what the Durham soul music scene was like.
Duan, one of the permanent exhibits of the new Smithsonian Museum is going to be called Musical Crossroads. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. Musical Crossroads music is really the lifeblood of the African-American community, and we are going to try to tell the story of African-American music through the course of 400-plus years from its beginnings when the, you know, the first enslaved people were brought here to the present day. That is a daunting task, but there's a lot of breadth and depth in that story.
Well, and I'm guessing, too, as you began to describe it, I thought there's a complex and daunting task. But you're also telling the story of America, and in terms of our cultural evolution, all of those threads can be heard through the history of African-American music.
Right. The story of African-American music really is the story of the history of America, of American culture. You look at the influential role that African-American music has had in this country, not only musically, but socially and culturally. And you can use rhythm and blues soul as a great example of how it really influenced a youth culture, our popular culture. If you look at our popular culture today and the global impact and influence of the music today and how it not only filters musically but in fashion, in language and all other mores and the television, that we show how intertwined that African-American culture is in American culture, and actually it is the same thing.
Johnny White, you know, Durham's got quite a reputation these days as a place for great music. It has changed a lot probably since when you began playing here. What do you think about the music scene now in Durham?
I wish we had more places to play. Unfortunately, we don't have the venues as we did back then to allow us to perform and showcase our talents. We were very fortunate back in the early 60s and 70s to have a lot of national artists who came through here, and that afforded us the opportunity to open for a lot of them and get national recognition.
Well, I appreciate you being on the show today and recalling for us the great days of soul music in Durham. Johnny White, soul music performer Johnny White and the Elite Band, going to be performing at the Hayti Heritage Center April 27th at 7 o'clock. Duan Reese is curator of music and performing arts at Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture, opening in 2015. Jason Perlmalter, a collector and researcher of local music and founder of CarolinaSoul.org. Thank you for being on the program. Thank you for listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, the broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.